The Possessed by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Part 1. Chapter 1. Introductory. Some details of the biography of that highly respected gentleman Stepan Trofimovich Verhovensky. In undertaking to describe the recent and strange incidents in our town, till lately wrapped in uneventful obscurity, I find myself forced in absence of literary skill to begin my story rather far back. That is to say, with certain biographical details concerning that talented and highly esteemed gentleman, Stepan Trofimovich Verhovensky. I trust that these details may at least serve as an introduction, while my projected story itself will come later. I will say at once that Stepan Trofimovich had always filled a particular role among us, that of the progressive patriot, so to say, and he was passionately fond of playing the part, so much so that I really believe he could not have existed without it. Not that I would put him on a level with an actor at a theater, God forbid, for I really have a respect for him. This may all have been the effect of habit, or rather, more exactly of a generous propensity he had from his earliest years for indulging in an agreeable daydream in which he figured as a picturesque public character. He fondly loved, for instance, his position as a persecuted man and, so to speak, an exile. There is a sort of traditional glamour about those two little words that fascinated him once for all, and, exalting him gradually in his own opinion, raised him in the course of years to a lofty pedestal very gratifying to vanity. In an English satire of the last century, Gulliver, returning from the land of the Lilliputians where the people were only 3 or 4 inches high, had grown so accustomed to consider himself a giant among them, that as he walked along the streets of London, he could not help crying out to carriages and passers-by to be careful and get out of his way for fear he should crush them, imagining that they were little and he was still a giant. He was laughed at and abused for it, and rough coachmen even lashed at the giant with their whips. But was that just? What may not be done by habit? Habit had brought Stepan Trofimovich almost to the same position, but in a more innocent and inoffensive form, if one may use such expressions, for he was a most excellent man. I am even inclined to suppose that towards the end he had been entirely forgotten everywhere, but still it cannot be said that his name had never been known. It is beyond question that he had at one time belonged to a certain distinguished constellation of celebrated leaders of the last generation, and at one time, though only for the briefest moment, his name was pronounced by many hasty persons of that day, almost as though it were on a level with the names of Chatadeev, of Bylinsky, of Granovsky, and of Herzen, who had only just begun to write abroad. But Stepan Trofimovich's activity ceased almost at the moment it began, owing, so to say, to a vortex of combined circumstances. And would you believe it? It turned out afterwards that there had been no vortex, and even no circumstances, at least in that connection. I only learned the other day to my intense amazement, though on the most unimpeachable authority, that Stepan Trofimovich had lived among us in our province not as an exile, as we were accustomed to believe, and had never even been under police supervision at all. Such is the force of imagination. All his life he sincerely believed that in certain spheres he was a constant cause of apprehension, that every step he took was watched and noted, and that each one of the 3 governors who succeeded one another during 20 years in our province came with special and uneasy ideas concerning him, which had, by higher powers, been impressed upon each before everything else, on receiving the appointment. Had anyone assured the honest man on the most irrefutable grounds that he had nothing to be afraid of, he would certainly have been offended. Yet Stepan Trofimovich was a most intelligent and gifted man, even so to say, a man of science, though indeed in science. Well, in fact he had not done such great things in science. I believe indeed he had done nothing at all. But that's very often the case, of course, with men of science among us in Russia. He came back from abroad, and was brilliant in the capacity of lecturer at the university, towards the end of the 40s. He only had time to deliver a few lectures. I believe they were about the Arabs. He maintained, too, a brilliant thesis on the political and Hanseatic importance of the German town Hanau, of which there was promise in the epoch between 1413 and 1428, and on the special and obscure reasons why that promise was never fulfilled. This dissertation was a cruel and skillful thrust at the Slavophiles of the day, and at once made him numerous and irreconcilable enemies among them. Later on, after he had lost his post as lecturer, however, he published, by way of revenge, so to say, and to show them what a man they had lost, in a progressive monthly review, which translated Dickens and advocated the views of George Sand, the beginning of a very profound investigation into the causes, I believe, of the extraordinary moral nobility of certain knights at a certain epoch or something of that nature. Some lofty and exceptionally noble idea was maintained in it, anyway. It was said afterwards that the continuation was hurriedly forbidden, and even that the Progressive Review had to suffer for having printed the first part. That may very well have been so, for what was not possible in those days. Though, in this case, it is more likely that there was nothing of the kind, and that the author himself